Welcome to the Smart Tech Check podcast, hosted by Mark Vina, your home for candid, insightful, and provocative conversations about the smart home, home automation, security, smartphones, PC and console gaming, and much more.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mark Vina, host of the Smart Tech Check podcast. Today is Friday, July 18th, 2025. Joining me for today's podcast are Stuart Walpin, who scribes for Popular Mechanics, AARP, Techlicious, Investopedia, and other great publications. Washington Senators fan. I just called you a Senators fan, Rob. Rob.
How old am I?
Company and other publications. John Quain naturally is on vacation somewhere, or he's on assignment. I don't know where he is, but
he's huddling with Elon Musk.
Oh wow! Mm-hmm. He'll love to see that when this podcast comes out. Guys, how are you? How are things? I'm wearing my Yankee shirt. It's halfway through the season. 66 games left, Stuart?
I do not know how many are left, just that they're 2 months left of the season. Yeah. 2.5 months.
Right. So
it's not how many games are left. It's how many of them the Washington Nationals will lose.
Be of good cheer, Rob. They have a really good young core. I think they're going to just get better and better. What's going on at the
exciting to watch
play. Is something else.
Spoken like a true damn Yankees, yeah. Washington Senator.
Where's Joe Hardy?
You got to have
Joe Hardy when you need him.
Yeah, exactly. I'm always amazed, Stuart. Right. Your range of knowledge. You know, movies, films, television, baseball history, even American history as well. But Broadway musicals, I'm really impressed. Wow. And by the way, I don't know whether you saw my review. When I was in New York a couple of weeks ago for the Samsung thing, I saw Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, yeah.
This Nicole Scherzinger, you know, Stuart, since you're...
Yes, I have seen her. I haven't seen her live, but I saw her at the Tony. I saw her perform from the Tonys. She's got a hell of a voice.
She's got pipes. And I got to tell you, I've seen a lot. I'm a big Broadway show guy, as you guys know. The only time I've ever seen an actor get a standing ovation during the show, not at the end, that's kind of perfunctory today in theater, it happened twice in this production, Sunset Boulevard, when she sings the two big ballads. I mean, it's a very abstract show. And by the way, I just got to say this before we begin, from a technological standpoint, and please read my review, you know, even though I'm not a professional theater critic, what they pull off at the beginning of the second act, when the lead actor sings the signature song, Sunset Boulevard, the orchestra is playing live, and there's a live, because it's all kind of video screens. This is a very heavy video screen type of production. It's not the 1994 production with Glenn Close. And they have the actor isolated at the backstage against the wall and behind the theater, behind the stage. And he, you know, sings his number live to the orchestra. So he's all wired, of course. Then he goes out the back doors onto 44th Street and sings the song with the entire cast live walking around the theater through Schubert Alley, which I can't imagine.
I've heard about this.
I mean, it is a bit of a gimmick, you know, and I'm not so sure what that really adds to the show, but that's a different topic. But
they're doing the same thing with Renee Ziegler in the Eva Peron musical in the West End in the West End in London.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. She goes out on the balcony to sing "Don't Cry for Me, Argentina."
Yeah. That I could see, because it's a very iconic
outside scene. The theater.
Yeah, but I mean, just the coordination and without any latency, and only Broadway could pull this off. I mean, by the way, New York Times wrote an article apparently doing this every night because they don't really. I don't. They have
Evita.
They have a couple of security guards behind him, and but other than that, I mean, I guess, you know, he does this every evening at 9:05 or whenever the scene starts, and it's become kind of a staple, you know. But show is closing on Sunday, so you don't have many days to see that if you want to see it. But thank you for that miming. Okay, all right. So let's start here, Stuart. You know, you have reported there is a mess going on in the console gaming space. I think you want to report on the Xbox fiasco. So let's talk about that. Let me tee that up for you.
Well, I want to preface my remarks to saying I am not a video game player. I think the last video game I played was on the Odyssey, connected to a coworker's 19-inch TV sometime in the late 1970s. Having gotten that out of the way, so my coverage, my reporting on the video game.
Pac-Man. I think when you say your last video game was
Pac-Man. No. It was worse than that. It was the pre-Pong version of table tennis.
Yes.
Okay. So that's how far back my video gaming goes. So this report is purely professional. As you well know, Microsoft cut around 9,000 jobs earlier this week across the Xbox universe, including they shut down or severely crippled about a half a dozen studios, including the Xbox studio. And of course, there's going to be this trickle-down effect to third-party studios who are now cutting their staff as well because they're not investing in games. Microsoft is really not investing in a lot of new games, primarily because they are now adopting, well, one, Blizzard acquisition 2 years ago. Right. So they've got a hell of a lot more content and re-releases and reboots and sequels and things like that that they could be working on. In addition, they announced the Xboxes Everywhere campaign, and it's Microsoft's way of sort of going console-less and making their games compatible on any platform and creating a Netflix-like version of Game Pass. So anybody can access their games on TV apps, on PC apps. They're already getting importing Sony PlayStation games as well. So there's all of that going on. But conversely, they've already announced, they haven't yet released, but announced two Asus-made handhelds, the Ally and the Ally X, which speculation is they'll list for around $600 and $900 when they're finally released. And they're working on a next-generation console, which is going to be a gaming PC disguised as a console with AMD supplying the primary processing, the GPU, for the unit. And on top of all of this, the day that they announced the cuts, there were these rampant rumors that Phil Spencer, the CEO of Xbox, was going to leave once the new console came out, whenever it's going to come out. And the company had to quickly squash those rumors. So there's all sorts of contrary, we're a console maker. No, we're not a console maker. We're a game maker. No, we're not a game maker because we've just canceled all of these studios and reboots. And so it's sort of like this schizophrenic identity crisis that Xbox seems to be going through, not deciding whether or not they're a hardware console company or they're not a hardware console company. Are they a gaming company or they're not a gaming company? So I think there's a lot of confusion right now, at least in the public, the gaming public mind, exactly what Xbox is up to.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about Xbox is that the Xbox group within Microsoft has never really been a tremendous profit maker.
Correct. It is making money, by the way. There were some.
It is making money, but it's not making the kind of margins that Microsoft Azure makes within the portfolio.
Right.
If you recall, a few years ago, right around the period of the COVID, they went on a buying spree of buying a bunch of studios. I think that what they're facing right now, I think, is this kind of existentialist threat where hardware, especially from a gaming experience standpoint, is less important.
Being threatened by them, but they're being threatened by phones,
yes.
Smartphones,
right? And let's face it, the consoles do have relatively long life cycles. You know, they're 6-7 years. It's a pain in the ass, I'm sure, for them to keep refreshing it because almost instantly, by the time you buy a console, because of the nature of silicon, it's out of date. You know, so there's some challenges there. So I know it sounds like a messaging fiasco, if you ask me, but. Let's get Rob to weigh in.
Well, I think clearly what Microsoft should do here is emphasize AI more. That's obviously the solution to this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm also not much of a gamer, although my last game played was a little more recent than that. Yeah, it's weird because Microsoft, when they got into gaming at all, everyone said, this company, really? And they've done very well with it. And now they do seem kind of lost at the plate. I'm looking at the story that Ars Technica.
Oops, he froze. Yeah. Well, while he gets back, talking about the AI, they just released, even after the about a couple of weeks, just last week, they fired all of these people. Then they posted an Xbox graphics is hiring, and the graphic that they use for the Xbox is hiring ad or whatever it was shows a woman at a PC, and the screen is facing towards the woman, but the back of the screen has all the text on it.
Wow.
So they can't even get those graphics right, even though they are leaning towards AI. That is the entire reason they're going with AMD, because AMD is very strong in the AI space. And we'll talk about this a little later when we talk about NVIDIA. But both Sony and Microsoft Xbox are going to be switching or relying a lot more on AMD and AMD's AI capabilities to bring not only new capabilities to new consoles, but PlayStation is going to bring some AMD graphics AI technology to boost the graphics in not only new consoles, but legacy consoles as well, probably sometime next year.
So, Rob, while you were paying your cable bill and your internet,
my Wi-Fi is clearly ready for the weekend to start already.
You know, I recognize.
I've had enough. I quit.
You know, I fully recognize that most guys our age and in the ballpark, we're not gamers. I mean, of course, I was VP of marketing at Alienware for several years, so I have, but that was years ago. There's really only kind of a couple of games that I play on a religious basis, and that is MLB The Show, which is a terrific baseball simulation. And I play Madden, you know, but I'm not into other games, so I'm kind of a very narrow type of person. But I do think largely this is a reflection of what's happening in the marketplace. I mean, you've got smartphones that are now coming on hard. They've always been there in the light, casual gaming space, but now that you can attach a Snapdragon or a high-powered iPhone to a larger screen. The screens are not an issue. And the horsepower.
Or controllers, or their controller attachments also.
Correct. So, So Rob, I guess before we go on to the next topic, when are you going to become a gamer? That's really the more important.
Yeah, I last was in a prior, but I think really we're talking a prior millennium. So I'll tell you, though, I do have on that bookshelf behind me, there is an old DVD-ROM copy of SimCity, I guess whatever the last version they put out. And I'm very much tempted to put this on my Windows laptop for old time's sake.
I thought you were going to say Leisure Suit Larry. Remember Leisure Suit Larry?
I remember that one too, but no, I do not have any copies of that.
Well, let's go to it. Let's hit the next topic that I think is going to be a bit more entertaining here. Let me bring up the next topic, and that is, and this is right up your alley, Mr. Rob. This is let's talk a little bit about the whole Mark Zuckerberg spending billions of dollars. You had a couple of extra words in the suggestion that I took out because I didn't want to skew the topic here. But let's talk about he's trying to obviously he's a Facebook, Meta, whatever you want to call it, they're on the AI train in a big way. And he's gone crazy on trying to build what he's calling AI super intelligence.
Yeah, it's this weird singular focus, which we last saw from Zuckerberg. I think it was actually 3 years ago when he was all in on the metaverse. And now, instead of lighting money on fire to make that happen, which didn't work out, he's going to go after AI super intelligence. This week, he had this thread on Threads, of course. For our super intelligence effort, I'm focused on building the most elite and talent-dense team in the industry. Sorry, I don't think he actually speaks like that. We're also going to invest hundreds of billions of dollars, billions and billions, into compute to build super intelligence. We have the capital from our business to do this. He's going on, they're building several multi-gigawatt clusters. We're calling the first one Prometheus, and it's coming online in 26. We're also building Hyperion, which will be able to scale up to 5 gigawatts over several years. We're building multiples, multiple more Titan clusters as well. Just one of these covers a significant part of the footprint of Manhattan. So there's a lot to unpack. Number one, the amount of money being thrown at this. I think if Facebook were a normal company with a normal board, somebody would say, wait a second, the last time you went all in on this thing, it didn't really work out so well. What makes you so sure? And second of all, just the looking at that, somebody pointed out these tech titans have this weird obsession with cool names for their AI facilities. And I'm like, oh, they have a case of Star Destroyer envy, don't they?
So Rob, I do you really think this is a passing fancy? Is that essentially that you...
I'm a skeptic of it, not of AI in general. It is of this category. Some people call it AGI, artificial general intelligence. So the whole idea that you will create some sort of AI platform, some model that is, in intellectual terms, a full spectrum human being, except for, I guess, being able to have actual feelings or emotions. They'll need the emotion chip like they did in Star Trek. I have talked to enough people in the AI industry, and one of them on a panel said, I think it's a distraction. When you look at where AI is making an actual difference, it is not dreams of AGI or super intelligence. It is not even so much the chatbots you can talk to on the web. It's narrow focused AI systems where you train an AI on, for instance, everything you know about the chemistry and physics of concrete and ask for it to come up with more efficient, cleaner, more sustainable recipes. MIT had a good post on their news blog about that the other day. Or Google has a project where they put AI to work on contrails. How can you get airplanes to produce less of them and thereby lower their carbon footprint? Where you take a lot of data and use the AI to make sense of it in a way that plain old software can't do and over-tired, overworked humans can't do either. And so this notion that Meta is going to reinvent the world with super intelligence and data centers named after Star Destroyers that are the size of Manhattan, like, dude, give it a break. Also, of course, what are you going to use to power all this? Zuckerberg didn't even mention that. And apparently a lot of it is going to be polluting fossil fuel gas, which is also what XAI is using to train Grok. Notwithstanding, the company's owner is the CEO of the best-known electric car company in the world. So I think all of these companies, but especially Meta, because they have a history of talking out their rear end about technology revolutions that never actually happen, should slow their roll.
So I guess, sort of the question really for you is that, when companies have lots and lots of money, and Meta obviously does, they feel compelled to spend it on something. We've had this discussion before on the podcast. I mean, there are companies out there that really don't see, there's really not a real-time opportunity for AI. I mean, AI may have impacted their business in some way, but it's not a direct piece of their business, but they feel compelled they have to get into the category in some way. It's kind of like, years ago when the internet bust, we got this big thing.
Which one? Internet. 2008 or 2000?
I'll just say 2000, the original internet type thing, where there were companies going into we're going to do this, and without absolutely no market requirement for this solution. And not to go down memory lane, but Stuart, do you think that, I can see some rational things why Meta and their applications, Facebook, Instagram, and other things could take advantage in a positive way, air quotes, with AI. I can also see some nefarious things that could happen as well. But what's your take?
I have a lot of conflicting thoughts on this. The first thought, which is probably the most obvious, is what happened yesterday with Paramount canceling the Stephen Colbert Late Night with Stephen Colbert show. And I'll explain how that fits. We are seeing takeover, maybe too extreme, but we're seeing these large operations taking over our media, our theoretically or previously independent media outlets to become essentially toys for these billionaires like Bezos and the Washington Post, the Japanese billionaire who, or the Chinese billionaire, Japanese billionaire who owns the LA Times, and now the Ellisons who are going to own Paramount and CBS. We've already seen some of the impacts on that, and Disney getting sued and being having to pay it off. And of course, the big fat bribe, as Colbert describes it, of Paramount paying off Trump so they could get their merger with Skydance. AI is, to my mind, the next platform. I think it's sort of where the internet was sometime in the late 50s, early 60s. It's really difficult to know at this point exactly where that's going to be headed, in the same way, for instance, that Bitcoin or blockchain was just 5 years ago. It was really unknown exactly whether it was going to take root or not, how it was going to. There are so many unknowns. But what troubles me is that Zuckerberg is poaching a whole lot of talent from other places in the AI universe, including OpenAI. He's paying an insane amount of money. The reports I read that he's paying $300 million over 4 years to poach some of these AI experts. And at the end of the day, I haven't heard any mention of quantum computing, but for one person to control, for instance, if one person bought and controlled the internet when it was still under development, I think that to me is a little scary. On the other side, China is obviously making deep inroads on AI. And again, this is something we'll talk about in the next topic with NVIDIA. And so the United States is sort of in this competition with a country that subsidizes its tech community, where in the U.S. it's all independent. So maybe it needs somebody like a Zuckerberg with all of these billion dollars to compete with what the Chinese are doing. So it's a weird conflict in my own head, whether or not this is a good thing, whether or not this is a bad thing, with the added, I don't know what I don't know about how AI will develop with computing. To Rob's point on power, that 5 gigawatt facility, and so far I don't know where, if they've mentioned where these are being built, but 1 gigawatt of power can power 800,000 homes, which means a 5 gigawatt facility needs enough power to power 4 million homes. So where they're putting this, and where, so there's so many unknowns,
solar power industries in the U.S. with the
right button. and with the big beautiful bill, or big ugly bill, however you want to call it, they've cut back on the subsidies to renewable energy, and that's, which is where you really need to have the power coming from.
Well,
I'm glad you mentioned the salaries there, because the amount of money Zuck is throwing at people, as a baseball fan, I thought, who's he think he is, the Yankees?
Well, we got
to
hit.
He's trying to buy a championship.
He's the evil empire in the tech world.
We got to go to the next topic, but I will say, Stuart, I give you a lot of credit for somehow, you know, squeezing in Stephen Colbert's cancellation. I would suggest one reason why he was fired. I don't think he's very funny, but putting that aside, you know, we could have a separate podcast on that. But I love the Ed Sullivan Theater, big fan. All right, so let's go to the next topic, the last topic. What's not on the slide here is that NVIDIA has recently reached, they hit a $4 trillion valuation, which is the biggest in American history. You know, market valuations come and go. You know, as I've told other folks, and I believe you guys would agree with this, is that good CEOs don't focus on market valuations because they are very transient. You know, your stock is up, well, then your valuation goes up, your stock is down, your valuation goes down. It's just a number. Having said that, you know, the way that from a tailwind standpoint, and the reason why this is such an important topic is that the amount of revenue that is generated in China for NVIDIA is a big number. You know, I want to say it's $500 billion, if I'm not mistaken. And they've taken a haircut over the last quarter or so. And now the H20, which, by the way, is not their flagship chip.
It's a throttle chip.
Yes. Yeah. So we've got to be careful about that. But And you got to give Jensen lots of credit. Jensen's playing like good CEOs, playing, you know, both sides of the house. He's trying to placate China, and he's also trying to, you know, chummy up to the commander in chief and currently in the White House. And that's a hard thing to do. But I guess the question for you is that, is there a what about the national security concerns? Because it, you know, we used to hear that all the time, you know, and nary a mention about that. So let me start with Stuart. What's your thought, Stuart?
Well, as we mentioned, the H-20 is not their best ship. They're not most advanced ship. It's the H-100 is NVIDIA's most advanced AI chip. And the H-20 is purposely throttled, so it is not cannot be as powerful as perhaps the industry wanted. But again, there are two sides to this. The argument that NVIDIA was making to the Trump administration and to Howard Lutnick in particular was that by keeping the chip out of China, it encourages China, especially Huawei and perhaps Xiaomi, to develop their own chips and get even further out front of the U.S. on AI than it may already be, although DeepSeek has not really turned into the world beater that everybody thinks it is. But they NVIDIA convinced the Trump administration, essentially, that they need to be supplying chips to China so China doesn't develop its own chips. Whether or not that's going to stop Huawei or Xiaomi from doing it themselves is something else. On the other side of the coin is that the Trump administration is using this, because Chinese companies are really looking to buy these chips, is using this as sort of, you'll excuse the pun, a chip in negotiation for rare earth metals in Chinese trade talks. Yeah. And obviously Chinese rare earth metals, which the U.S. does not have in large supply, are essential for creating electronics for any company, including American companies. So, you know, the fact that they're not getting NVIDIA's top chip, I'm not sure whether or not that's going to forestall AI chip development by Huawei or Xiaomi. But again, there are a lot of known unknowns going on here. We don't know whether or not, you'll excuse the expression, money changed hands between NVIDIA and a certain government official to get this passed through, whether or not the trade-off between NVIDIA chips and rare earth metals is actually an equal trade or not. So these are all questions that are surrounding this.
So, Rob, I know you being in the Washington swamp, because you love living down there, I'm sure you've got an opinion on this.
I got an opinion of almost everything. I get the idea of trying to, you know, execute an economic strategy versus the People's Republic of China. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in this administration to execute it well, given how completely incoherent the tariff rollout has been, going up and down and in and out. There's just no logic in that, no consistency. I don't even know what they're trying to do. And if we're talking about playing any sort of version of geostrategic poker, you know, I'm not trying to defend Xi Jinping, but I fear he would be better at the table than Donald Trump in this particular hand of cards. So, and I certainly don't think the Chinese are going to say, oh, great, we have access to their second tier chip. We'll tell our national champions, take the weekend off. It's all right. They're not going to do that. I mean, this is a country that is very serious about establishing a lot of leads in different areas of technology. Whether it's AI chips, electric vehicles, you know, go outside the U.S. And it's amazing how many Chinese-made EVs you will see, which of course aren't on the streets here at all. Wind power, solar power, they're not going to slack off just because of this one deal.
Right. No, I'm in agreement with that. I think the you know, from my perspective, I'm not a big fan of protectionism. You know, I've talked to you guys before. I'm not really a big fan of tariffs. That's another podcast, you know. And I think in theory, you know, fair trade is always a better outcome for all parties involved. I am concerned about the national security implications of these issues. And even though they are older chips, you know, anybody who knows anything about silicon, you know, the algorithms, the capabilities, the little engines that are built in each of these chips, which are amazing. A lot of that legacy technology shows up in even current generation silicon, you know. So I'm still a big believer that, if, you know, when we're building F-16s and, B-2 bombers and stuff like that. I would hope we're not using silicon that is being sold to other company, other countries for a whole bunch of different reasons. But Stuart, let me give you a minute to close this one out.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that. Well, just on the EV car issue, I believe I read last week that EV cars will surpass fossil fuel cars in China within the next 5 years or so, if not sooner. And the fact that, again, that the U.S. has cut back on renewable fuel subsidies, in fact, they may even be taxing that, and the fact that a lot of the EV car regulations in California are being fought by the U.S. government, the big, beautiful bill has crippled the tech industry to a certain extent on trying to keep pace with China. And if you're talking about national security issues, I think that's the biggest one, by cutting off the potential future of development of next generation energy, especially with Zuckerberg wanting to build facilities that need the power of 4 million homes. So this is, I think, the biggest thing that this administration, at the same time as it's trying to get technology going, is cutting back on the thing that's going to power it in the 21st and 22nd centuries.
Rob, I know you'll be equally shy about...
Well, I appreciate that vote of confidence, and we're all going to reach the 20... Well, not those of us talking. We're going to reach the 22nd century. That's a pep talk we all can do. It's... The other point I'd add is, you can't talk about technology in China without, the extensive involvement of the Chinese government and the companies and operations it tolerates or outright sponsors in hacking into U.S. systems and in many cases still resident in them. So I think that is when I worry about what China's up to in technology, is that much more so than, are they going to reach parity with the U.S. in AI processor manufacturing? Is the fact that they seem to think it's fine to start crawling through random systems across the United States and just camp out there just in case they might need to do something later on. That is a problem that is not getting solved by any of these things we've discussed so far today.
No, I agree with that. Just to close this out, I just think that the national security issues to me are paramount. It's less about, because I do, there's no guarantee. I mean, NVIDIA can stumble. Other, Qualcomm can stumble. Pick your company. No companies have perfect track records, and that's been proved again over and over again in business history, where companies sit on their laurels and they just don't innovate quickly enough, and other companies surpass them. But I do have concerns about American technology being sold to other companies purely because of that issue. But I'm not worried about the innovation angle. But I'm sure we will continue this discussion going forward. So, guys, thanks for taking the time to join me for today's podcast. For our viewing and listening audience, thanks for making the Smart Tech Check podcast part of your daily commute. Please make sure that you hit the like and subscribe buttons at the end of today's podcast, or use these on-screen QR codes to connect with me. You can also follow me on X at Mark Vina Tech Guy. And until next time, have a great week. And Rob and Stuart, thank you again.
See you all around.